All right, so last week we started a series. I'm not sure if you were here or not or heard it, but last week we started this new series called The Far Country. And it's a study in the life of Abraham, and it's really a study in the way God works. And the way God works in all of our lives, really, is to take us on a journey into the unknown. What we want is God to give us a known. We want a roadmap. Here's where we're going. This is what we're doing. But what God does, what he does to Abraham, and we see our journey and his journey, what God does is he takes Abraham from this place that he grew up, where he is comfortable. And God takes him out, and God says, I want you to leave your country, your people, your father's household, leave all that you know, really. Leave the place you are, your comfort zone. And go to a place, and God never tells him where. He says, go to a country I will show you. Move into the unknown. And he basically says, follow me, follow my word. I will direct you. I will get you there. And when you see Abraham's journey, it's just like all of our journeys. Because every one of us have things in our life as we look to the future, we think, I don't know. I don't know how this is going to work. I don't know how that's going to work out. And it's out of your control. It's out of your hands. You really don't know what's ahead. And so as a result, you're kind of moving into this unknown in some area. And God is constantly saying, just trust me, follow me. I will get you there. I will take you there. He knows where he's taking you, but we don't know. The problem is for us is that when we don't know, when we are out of control, and that's what just a different definition of walking by faith, when we're out of control, we get anxious, we get worried, we get all spun up because we like to know where we're headed. And so when we get spun up, when we get anxious, when we get worried, when we get feel that out of control, something inside of us starts clamoring to grab control one way or another. We're trying to find some way. If you're in a disequilibrium, you try to find a way to find some equilibrium. If you feel like you're out of control, you try to find a way to be stable in where you are, to find some security in the insecurity. And in many ways, we try to take away what it means to walk by faith so that we can walk by sight. You know, as I've been thinking about this week, because what happens is when you feel out of control and you start grabbing at things to gain control, you get yourself in trouble. You ultimately get yourself, because you start trying to solve the problem before God is ready for you to solve the problem. You start trying to get answers before he's ready to give them to you. And you try to get control. And it almost always gets us in trouble. And we're in the middle of this series. Really, we're doing this series for two reasons. One is that you guys, every one of you, are facing things that are out of your control. All of you are facing an uncertain future. It could be your family, it could be your health, it could be your marriage, it could be your job, it could be your money. Who knows what it is? It could be none of those or all of those. But all of you individually are facing the unknown, going, I don't know what's going to happen, I don't know what to do. The second reason we're doing that is that we as a church are facing the unknown. You know, as we move, kind of crawl closer to a year or so, year and a half or so from now when I retire, we're kind of like, what are we going to do? We don't know. And so as we're facing this uncertainty, I just think it'd be wise for us to pause and to say, God, guide us. Give us the principles. Show us how to live in the midst of uncertainty. And so that's really why we're doing this series. And as I've been thinking about today, especially, the things we do when we feel out of control, I God kept putting it in my mind. One summer I played Little League in Arlington. And I played for the Elks Club, and we had these great little uniforms. We had a good team, and why not? And we played out at Randall Mill Park in Arlington. And in Randall Mill Park, just to kind of give you a visual, the ball fields were all kind of on one side. You know, they were all from the little leaguers to the bigger leaguers. And it was all over here. And then there was a road down the middle. And on the other side was all the picnic areas. And so this side over here is flat because of all the fields. Over here, it's a little bit of a rolling thing. And there's a creek that ran along the side of that that kind of marked the end of the park. And so during Little League, several times, my mom would pick up, she'd make a big picnic lunch, and we would go to the park, and then after the game, we would all go over to the picnic table because it was still light, and we would have a meal, and we would play and all that stuff. I know somewhere, I'm sure, I can't imagine, that my mom never said, don't play next to the creek. I, I'm sure she said that. But it was a creek that had kind of a steep creek. The banks were kind of steep, and then there was a creek down at the bottom. And as a kid, it looked like a Grand Canyon. You know, and I don't know. But one day that she's getting all the stuff out and all the adults are, you know, yapping over here and the kids are all playing. I don't know what happened. I got up to the edge of the thing, and I don't know if I fiddled, I fell. The next thing I know, I'm sliding down the creek bank towards the water. And I'm trying to grab anything I can find, a rock, a tree root, a bush, my friend's leg, anything I can find to grab hold of so I don't end up, because I'm sliding out of control. It's that feeling I kept having as I worked on this week's message. That sliding out of control, trying to grab something to bring stability in the slide. I think that's how we feel in the middle of the unknown journey. Find, grab something to stop the slide. Because that's how we feel out of control, even though God has got it very much under control. And when we grab things, anyway, grab your Bible, turn over to Genesis 16. I want you to see how Abraham and Sarah handled this feeling of out of control on this unknown journey as they grappled with it and as they tried to trust the Lord in the middle of it. Now, when we come to chapter 16, it's been about 10 years from what we looked at last week in Genesis 12. In Genesis 12, God, and it's what we talked about last week, God comes to Abraham again, says, leave your country, your people, your father's household, and go, I'll show you the land. And then God makes some promises. The first promise he makes is, I will make you, Abraham, into a great nation, which is fascinating because now when we get to Genesis 16, Abraham is 85 years old and has no kids. It is very, very difficult. It's almost impossible to create a great nation if you have no kids, right? Because the nation comes from the kids. And so we're deep into the journey. Abraham and Sarah are now in their mid-80s, and there is no child. So they've got the promise. And look at how verse 16 starts. It's very blunt. Now Sarai and Abram's wife, remember their names get changed later. Now Sarai, Abram's wife, had borne him no children. And there's the blunt statement. The promise is not being fulfilled. Sarah is empty. She is barren. Sarah is on this journey into the unknown. Her life is out of control. She's waiting and she's waiting and she's waiting and she's trying to wait by faith. But eventually the journey into the unknown goes on and on and on. She feels out of control. She starts grabbing at things. Now it would be helpful to remember, you may or may not know, that from Genesis 12 to Genesis 16, in this 10-year period, God has shown up about five times. God has shown up and he's come to Abraham and he has reiterated the promise. You're going to be a great nation. You're going to have a child. He's going to grow into a great nation. You're going to have a great nation. So God has repeated that. As a matter of fact, in chapter 15, it gets a little complicated because God is so specific. He says to Abraham that a great nation will come out of your body. And you, Abraham, are going to have a child. It's going to be a great nation. And I've got to assume, I may be wrong here, I'm not sure. I'm assuming that Abraham went home and told Sarah, hey, guess what? God showed up today, said, you know, the child out of my body. Now, he might be like most men, I don't know. Because most men go home and would have said, hey, I talked to God today. Really? How's he doing? Great. And what did he say? Nothing. You know, that's how we tend to report conversations. But I think Abraham went home and said, hey, God showed up, here's the promise. But if you're Sarah and you're 10 years into this gig and God isn't showing up, you start to parse out what God said. You start to kind of interpret God's words. And if you're Sarah, you probably go home and you say, and you're thinking, what God said is the child will come out of Abraham's body. I was never mentioned. And you start fretting it a little bit. You start working it a little bit. You start coming up, I wonder if there's a solution that God has in mind, which is what you pick up next. Look at verse 1, the second half. It says, but she had an Egyptian slave named Hagar. So she said to Abram, the Lord has kept me from having children. Go sleep with my slave. Perhaps I can build a family through her. Abram agreed to what Sarai said. So after Abram had been living in Canaan 10 years, Sarai, his wife, took her Egyptian slave to Hagar and gave her to her husband to be his wife, and he slept with Hagar and she conceived. Now, before you weird out about all of it, this was a fairly normal cultural deal. It was not completely weird. This was this whole surrogate thing of wives and marriage was kind of normal in that culture. And so Sarah is suggesting a culturally normative thing. Just because it's culturally normative doesn't mean it's the best thing. But what I want you to notice as we listen to that, did you hear that both times Hagar was mentioned, it was emphasized that she was an Egyptian slave? She was an Egyptian slave. It was Hagar from Egypt is who we're talking about. That is an unnecessary detail in many ways. You don't need to know that. You don't need to know her nationality. It doesn't matter. So she's a slave, a handmaiden. That's really all you need to know. So when the writer twice, every time, now she's Egyptian. What he wants you to do is pause and go, so what difference does that make? So turn back four chapters. Turn to chapter 12. The first half of chapter 12 is what we've talked about many times. It's when God calls him, right? And says, leave your country, your people, your father's household. Go to the country I will show you. He makes a great promise. I'm going to make out of you a great nation. Verses 4 through 9 is Abraham going out on the journey. Things are going great. Wherever he goes, he's building altars. He's worshiping God. Things are really sailing along. It is fantastic. Then you come to verse 10. Now there was, and here it is, just as blunt as chapter 16. Now there was a famine in the land. The same stark beginning. Chapter 16, Sarah had no kids. Chapter 12, there's a famine in the land. Chapter 16, Sarah has an empty womb. Chapter 12, Abraham has an empty belly. Both of them are on this journey into the unknown. Both of them are out of control. Both of them are trying to grab something to gain some kind of stability. And things are starting to get complicated and a little scary, and he feels out of control. So he tries to do something. And it says that Sarah's solution, I've got Hagar. Abram's solution says he went down to Egypt to live there for a while because the famine was severe. As he was about to enter Egypt, he said to his wife Sarai, I know what a beautiful woman you are. Now, men, this is a great start to a conversation. Right? This is, if you're going to start a conversation, you, my dear, are beautiful. And then it goes to pot. See, then he keeps talking. See, men, stop there. You are beautiful. Zip it up. But look at what he says. When the Egyptians see you, they will say, this is his wife. Then they will kill me, but will let you live. So when we get to Egypt, say you are my sister, so that I will be treated well for your sake, and my life will be spared because of you. No mention of what she might endure. It doesn't take a rocket scientist, really, does it, to realize this is not going to end well. And so look at what happens next. But when Abram came to Egypt, the Egyptians, he was right, the Egyptians saw that Sarah was very beautiful, a very beautiful woman. When Pharaoh's officials saw her, they praised her to Pharaoh, and she was taken into his palace, and he treated Abram well for her sake. And Abram, here's the payoff for Sarah. And Abram acquired sheep and cattle, male and female donkeys, male and female servants, a la Hagar, and camels. Abram and Sarah are both in the middle of this journey into the unknown where they don't know what's going to happen. And Sarah forgets what she knows about God, that it's God that builds the family. It's God that provides kids. She kind of gets some of that. And she says, I got to do something. I got to do something. Here's Hagar. Abram goes to this land. And God says, you go to the land. I'm going to show you where to go. I'm going to take you to this land I'm going to give you. And he gets to the land where there's no food. And all of a sudden he forgets that the God who gave the land can provide the food. And he thinks, I've got to do something. And he goes to Egypt. And they make a mess of things that to this day is still working itself out. She doesn't trust God to provide a child. He doesn't trust God to provide food. And see, it shows us that there are these two dangers that you and I will face in the middle of the unknown journey. This journey into the unknown is going to cause, and we're going to want to do one of these two things. And the first is this: we're going to be tempted to try to help God out. You know, see, that's what Abraham did. Hey, God, there's no food. I know what I'll do. You forgot to give us food, so I'll solve the problem and I'll go to Egypt and get us food. And he steps in because, see, we often think if God's not doing anything, it means we're supposed to do something instead of waiting for God to do something. Now, finish this sentence for me, right? Finish this. God helps those that... Right. That sounds so biblical. 75% of Americans think that is right out of the Bible. It's from Benjamin Franklin. And he stole it from the Greeks. And it's this whole idea that what we believe is that my job is, God can't get it done, so I've got to do something to come alongside to make it happen. And that's what Abraham dares to do. Now, Sarah does just the opposite. See, she, what her danger is, she tried to hurry God up. Right? Abraham tried to help God out. Sarah tries to hurry God up. They're in this 10-year journey. And I can't imagine how long 10 years is. It is forever. We get impatient. We're waiting so long. We start trying, and our faith gets tired. We get tired of trusting. We get impatient, and we step in to make things happen. We step in to try to speed things up. Because when you're out of control, when you keep walking by faith, it's exhausting and it's terrifying because you're out of control. And so we start grabbing at something, and so let's either get Hagar or let's go down to Egypt. And that's what we do. When things aren't happening fast enough at work and your job is kind of at risk, you got to get this done. The company's on edge. If you don't make the stuff happen, we start cutting corners to speed things up. We think it's up to us to make it happen instead of waiting on God. If you're single, you love Jesus and you want to get married, and you're kind of waiting for God to bring that person into your life, the temptation is, you know what, if I were to lower my moral standards, if I were willing to start getting more physically involved with guys or gals, maybe God would bring someone, because that's what all my peers are doing. You know, if there are these decisions that need to get made, and you're afraid that the people making them aren't going to make them the way you think they ought to be made, you start manipulating behind the scenes to try to convince people ahead of time to do what it is that you want them to do. Your kids aren't moving fast enough towards Jesus, so you start trying to manipulate to get them where you want them to be. You're trying to help God or to hurry God up. And it's because in the middle of the unknown, what you got to do is trust. And that is so hard to do. See, God allows you on the journey into the... No. God leads you into the journey into the unknown. And when he does so, it's really designed to expose two different things inside of you. See, the journey shows you who you are. God does not take you on the journey to find out whether you'll trust him. God doesn't take you on the journey to see what you're made of. He already knows all of that. He knows you completely, crystal clear, all the way through. He takes you on the journey so that you'll see what you're made of. You see, and to create within you this need. And so one of the truths that you begin to see about yourself, and I expressed it this way, you can see it, is that if I'm not enough, if I'm not enough without something, then I won't be enough with it. That's what we have to learn about ourselves. See what we, and I freaked everybody in the office out because I wasn't going to fill in this blank. See, you got a blank and you got to fill it in. I can't fill it out for you. What Sarah believed is that she was nothing without a child, and she would be nothing until she had a child. What Abraham believed is that he was nothing without food, and he would be nothing until he had food. And we all have something like that. Every one of us have this idea that within us that I won't be whole until I won't be whole until I have a purpose. Or I won't be whole until I have kids. Or I won't be whole until I have wealth. I have a buddy who grew up poor. He grew up poor. There was never enough. The kids made fun of him for what he wore to school. And he was wearing the hand-me-downs. And he just struggled with poverty in his home. And he said, I won't be anything until I have wealth. And then here's the interesting thing. Then he made a lot of money. And he still was nothing in his own mind. If you're nothing without it, you won't magically become something when you get it. There is nothing in this world that can fill the void in your soul but God. Nothing at all. And so if you have this idea in your mind that when this happens, then I'll be full, you never get there. And it doesn't matter whether it's beauty or acceptance or whatever it is. If you have this thought, I'm nothing without, then nothing can fill that but God. And God takes you there to help you see that you're living your life based on something else rather than Him. Because, see, there's a corollary that goes here. There's a corollary. That's the second point here, is that if God is not enough when I am without whatever that is, then He won't be enough for you when you get it. If God is not enough for you, if God alone is not all you need, if it's like I need God and wealth, then when you get the wealth, God still won't be enough. If it's God and happy kids, then when the kids are happy, it still won't be enough. Because you still won't be sure that He's good. You still won't trust Him. See, if you have this mentality that I can't trust God unless, or I can only trust God when, or when God does such and such, then I'll trust Him. And then when He does it, you still don't trust Him. The journey into the unknown is to take you into a place where all of these other things you're counting on to fill you up are not there, so that you trust God and God alone in the middle of it. And so what's fascinating is Abraham and Sarah, because they're trying to bring stability, they both screw this thing up royally. They make a mess of their lives. You got Hagar, and I got Ishmael. You got them down in Egypt, and that's called lost complications. But here's the promise. Here's the deal. God's promise is that even when I fail, He is faithful. And that is critical. Men and women, even when I fail, He is faithful. Because on this journey into the unknown, let me just assure you now, if the journey is long enough, you will fail. You will try to grab something. You'll make a mess of it. But the great thing is, it doesn't matter. God is faithful. Turn it back over to Genesis 16. And let's go back and finish that part of this story. Okay, look down, we're in verse 4, we had left it that Hagar conceived. It says, when she knew she was pregnant, she began to despise her mistress. Do you see this? So up till now, it's been Sarah in a superior position, Hagar in the inferior position, right? It's the master and it's the slave. Then all of a sudden, you know, Hagar gets pregnant, and the tables turn, and Hagar's strutting around with her little belly pooching out, right, going, hey, who couldn't have a baby around here, and who could? Then Sarai said to Then Sarai said to Abram, you are responsible for the wrong I am suffering. I put my slave in your arms, and now that she knows she is pregnant, she despises me. May the Lord judge between you and me. This is all your fault. Right? I cannot believe, this is what she says, I cannot believe you had such a stupid idea. You know, what were you thinking, right? To which Abraham kind of takes a step back, and it says, well, look, he doesn't argue, he just says, okay, the slave is in your hands, I'll be in the barn. And he goes out and watches TV. And he says, do with her whatever you think best. Then Sarai mistreated Hagar to the point that she fled, she ran away. Sarah isn't owning her part of this thing. She's attacking the symptom, not the problem. And so Hagar makes a run for it. Look, verse 7, and I love this. This is so filled with hope. The angel of the Lord found Hagar. See, Hagar is on her own journey into the unknown. She didn't ask to go with Abraham and Sarah. She was given. She didn't ask whether she wanted to be a surrogate mom. It just happened. She's in this journey, and she's trying to figure this thing out. And so now she said, I'm done with this. I'm running away. And the Lord finds her. What a beautiful thing. The Lord finds her. He comes and gets us. He says, he found her near a spring in the desert. It was the spring that is beside the road to Shur. The road to Shur is the road back to home. She's headed back to Egypt. And God speaks. He said, Hagar, slave of Sarai, where have you come from and where are you going? She says, I'm running away from my mistress Sarai, she said. Then the angel of the Lord told her, go back to your mistress and submit to her. The angel added, I will increase your descendants so much that they will be too numerous to count, which is an amazing promise. It's very similar to what he said to Abraham. So I'm going to multiply this into a huge nation. And then here's what he says to her. He says that you're now pregnant. You will give birth to a son. You shall name him Ishmael, for the Lord has heard of your misery, and he will be a wild donkey of a man. His hand will be against everyone, and everyone's hand against him, and he will live in hostility toward all of his brothers. And that doesn't sound quite as good. And she gave this name to the Lord, who spoke to her. You are the God who sees me. I have now seen the one who sees me. And that is why the well was called Beer Lahai Roi, which literally means the God who sees me. And it is still there between Kadesh and Beersheba, it says. So Hagar, the summary, so Hagar bore Abram a son, and Abram gave the name Ishmael to the son she had born. And Abraham was 86 years old when Hagar bore him Ishmael. Now look, when you're studying especially the Old Testament, you want to look at the names of God, you want to look at what God's doing, see what it said about God, because that's really the point that the writer's trying to get you to see. There's four things the writer here wants you to see about God. And the first is this, is that God finds us. God hunts for us. God pursues us. God chases us. It reminds us of Jesus saying he was a shepherd that went out and looked for lost sheep. That there is no place you can run that can take you too far from the Lord. And so that's who God is. He comes and he finds us. The second thing you see is that God speaks to us. He has a word for us. When he shows up, God is not silent. He speaks exactly to Hagar's need, just as he will to you. The third thing you see is that God sees us, right? She names the well, the God who sees me. He knows exactly what she's going through. He knows exactly what you're going through. He sees you, your life, your story, exactly where you are right now. And the last is that God hears you. Ishmael, the name Ishmael literally means the God who hears. So when God comes to Hagar and says, go back and name this child Ishmael, it's so that everybody in the family, everybody in the whole story keeps hearing, God hears. Hey, Ishmael is really all you're saying is, hey, God hears. And his name means God hears, so that the whole point is that God hears you. Abraham, God hears you. Sarah, God hears you. He knows what you're going. He sees you, and he knows you, and he hears your heart. The journey is going on. I know it's a struggle, but God's paying attention. It may not seem like it. It may not seem like he's moving nearly fast enough, but he hears you. He sees you right where you are. And he's taking you on this journey to work something out in you. And here's what's so cool. Here's so cool. Because you know what? Abraham and Sarah have made a mess of this thing. And it would be so easy for God to go, I'm out. I'm done. You got it. You want Ishmael? You got Ishmael. But you know what? The story continues. God still does exactly what he promised. He still brings the son Isaac into the mix. He still builds the great family through which the Son of God comes. He still keeps working. When you fail, and you will, when you grasp at something in the midst of the unknown journey, and you will, and you make a mess of stuff, things are now complicated and all wonky, and you think, God's done with me now, he is still faithful He will take you to the end. He will not leave you or forsake you. He will not abandon you. He will fulfill the promises to you. So even when you fail, He is faithful. And you will fail because the unknown just does crazy stuff to us. So how do we live in the middle of this? We're in this journey. Let me give you three thoughts that come out of this passage for me on how to really live this out. The first is this. Stop and ask yourself, before you do something crazy, ask yourself, is this a step of faith or is this a lack of faith? Is what you're thinking about doing motivated by a trust in God's character and His goodness and His promises and His word, or is it moved by fear? So you got to pause in the middle of this, because are you acting out of fear that is driving you? Because it will. Or is it a faith where you're kind of pausing to say, God, I am doing this because I really do. And it's always got to flow out of, I'm doing it because I believe You are good. If God is anything less than good, it is coming out of fear. And if you are trying to save your bacon to make something happen, it's coming out of fear. And see, I've kind of had to realize this after I've screwed up so many times. Any decision I'm making in the middle of the night is probably out of fear. Right? If there is a sense of urgency in me, kind of this little panicky, obsessive thinking going around in circles, that's probably coming out of fear. If all that inner turmoil is probably coming out of fear. So here's what I'm trying to learn to do. I'm kind of getting better at it. I'm not great at it yet. When I sense that, the first thing I do now is I'm forcing myself to wait 24 hours at least before I act on any wonky ideas. Because the wonky idea, it's the fear, it's urgency. So I'm trying to go, okay, I'm going to wait, I'm going to pause so that I slow down to make sure that's right. The second thing I'm doing is I'm learning to monitor my sighing. I don't know if this makes sense to you guys, but when I am all wonky inside and stressed out and feeling out of control, my sighing goes up. You know, do you do this? When I catch myself throughout the day just kind of going, it tells me fear is winning the day. And any decisions I make are going to be motivated out of fear and not out of faith. I'm learning to ask somebody else, does this make sense? And you would not believe how many people have said, not really. No, I would encourage you not to do that. And they have saved me a ton of heartache. And the fourth thing is I'm just learning to take a walk. To just take a walk, get a little exercise, move around a little bit, change my perspective so that I can check, is it fear or is it faith? So the first thing you got to do is you got to ask, is this faith or is it fear? Second thing, let me encourage you how to pray. And this kind of comes from an African proverb, but in fact it's even older than that. And it says, pray for stronger backs, not lighter loads. Okay? You see the difference in that? The great American prayer is end it now. Make it go away. Whatever it is we're facing, we're in this unknown, and what we want is the unknown, the uncertainty to end. Right? Turn my kids around right now. Ease my physical pain right now. Provide what I need financially right now. And what we're praying, and it's okay to pray those things, okay? Don't get me wrong. Don't hear me saying never pray for it to end. That's not what I'm saying. I mean, even Jesus said, let this cup pass from me, right? Really, the difference in what you see so much in the New Testament is Paul showing us, pray for strength to endure what you face. God, make me stronger in my faith so I can handle whatever I'm facing today. So alongside, I guess really what I'm saying is add this in, alongside the prayer of Lord, end it now, is to pray, God, give me strength to walk the journey. Give me endurance so I don't push for the shortcut. Give me stamina so that I can stay the course. And Lord, give me a stronger back so that whatever this load is, whatever Your load is, you can handle it as long as it takes to get to where God's taking you. Right? Because see what happens, again, you get tired. The longer you go into the unknown, there is a fatigue factor that kicks in saying, will it ever end? And then you'll do anything to make it end. And it's in that moment you desperately need to say, God, make me stronger for this day whether it ends or not. And then finally, it's the whole point of the unknown journey is this, is that trust God instead of trying to help him. God doesn't need your help, I assure you. He's got this under control. But the whole purpose, don't forget, the whole purpose of this journey into the unknown, the whole purpose of leave where you are to go to the place I will show you is so that you will learn to trust God more. It's so that you, in the middle of this thing, will be connected to God in much of a way. See, he's got this. Whatever it is that's going on, he's got this. He doesn't need your help. But what he's trying to do is convince you that your connection to him is what really, 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 really matters. He's for you. He loves you. He's got a great plan. But we keep forgetting he has a great plan. We want to do something about it. And so the whole thing is to go, God, I trust that you are good and I can rest in what you're doing. And he is, and you can. All right, let's pray, you guys. Lord, thanks for this morning. I am really grateful, Lord, that when you've written the scriptures, you did not gloss over all the messes. You didn't give us lily white characters that never made a mistake. And Lord, we can see ourselves in them. And so, Lord, I do pray that you would grow our faith, that we would trust you, lean on you, know that you're good and have a greater confidence that whatever we're in the middle of doesn't change your goodness. Lord, I pray for my friends, everybody in here. The journey is long and they're tired. They want you to fix it today. Lord, I would pray that you would by your grace. But if you don't take it away today, would you instead give us an endurance? Strengthen our faith muscle so that we can trust you for more and more and for longer and longer. You are good, and we praise you for that. You are faithful, and you will keep every promise. And you will never abandon us, and everything you do for us comes through your love. And so, Lord, we are grateful. We pray these things in your very precious name. Amen.